You are listening to a podcast from West Hill United Church, located in Scarborough, Ontario, Canada. These podcasts are made possible by the generous support of our listeners, volunteers, and members of our community. To donate, go to our website, www.westhill.net, and click on the Canada Helps button, or go to westhill.net/donate.
Good morning. Welcome to West Hill United. Each week, in order to remain aware of our treaty obligations and the relationship we have with our First Nations sisters and brothers, we read one of the 94 recommendations sent to all levels of government by the Truth and Reconciliation Committee. We expect to complete these readings in June 2017. And this is recommendation number 37. We call upon the federal, provincial, and territorial governments to provide more supports for Aboriginal programming in halfway houses and parole services. And we also all acknowledge every week whose land we're on. We wish to acknowledge that we are on the territory of the Mississaugas of the New Credit First Nations lands, which lands were previously occupied by the Seneca and Huron-Wendat First Nations.
Grounded, Guided, Growing, A Time for Centering, from Scott Kearns.
Hopefully you were handed as you came in a sheet of wisdom. If you didn't get one, could you please indicate and we'll get you one. Who has the stack? Thank you, Peter. As Peter moves towards you, just raise your hand. Okay, we'll get you one. This is just collected wisdom, which you could have done too, but it's on the theme of what we talk about each week. Over there, Peter. I'm going to wait. This is just collected wisdom on the theme that we talk about right about now in the service, and actually it connects everything that we do here, which is the interconnectedness. When we say grounded in life, you open your eyes, you read something, you walk anywhere, and it's not long until you realize the interconnections that are there. They're massive and they're intricate. And so that's the theme later in the message, but I'm just going to ask you now, just as I play a little, just to cast your eyes on some of those thoughts. Sometimes it's about the natural world, sometimes it's about the human world, and with the theme of that each of us is impacted by it in ways that we most often can't control, and that we impact it, sometimes with effect, sometimes with not. But I the last quote on the page, on the second page, if you think you're too small to have an impact, try going to bed with a mosquito. Which sort of suggests that idea of even a little thing can have an effect. So as I play and we move into that, and that will be the theme we're considering a bit later on, so about the web of life.
Our first reading comes from William Ellery Channing. Channing was a transcendental poet and a significant figure in the Unitarian Church in the 19th century. Others are affected by what I am and say and do, so that a single act of mine may spread and spread in widening circles through a nation or humanity. Through my vice, I intensify the taint of vice throughout the universe. Through my misery, I make multitudes sad. On the other hand, every development of my virtue makes me an ampler blessing to the human race. Every new truth that I gain makes me a brighter light to humanity. And the second reading is from the Aboriginal activist groups in Queensland, Australia. If you have come to help me, you are wasting your time. But if you have come because your liberation is bound up with mine, then let us work together. Offered as wisdom for the journey.
Focused Moments, from Greta Vosper.
Because I was actually in Thunder Bay this week, Annie has pulled a focus moment from one of the collections of the focus moments from years past. So some of you may recognize in this an older pattern than the one with which I usually write focus moments now. There is, under the mystery that is us, a deep abiding sense of oneness. It calls us to see each other as works of art. It calls us to hold each other as precious. It manifests itself in each expression of love. As we gather today, may we be filled with an awareness of that oneness. And may it spill over our time together to soak into and through the whole of our living. As light into light, we pray. Amen. The theme this morning was interconnectedness and interdependence, and I was hoping to speak to you about how we are so interconnected, and then it occurred to me that we actually talk about that every week. Every week, Scott speaks to us a little bit about those three things about why we come in here, and those were established a few years ago because it occurred to us that people who came into this place who knew that we weren't going to be talking about God or reading from the Bible or focusing on Jesus might wonder what on earth it is that we do. Like, why do we come here? And so we identified, Scott came up with these three words, grounded, guided, growing, which talk about what we do. We come here to be grounded in the interconnectedness of life. We talk about that and explore that. That's about that interconnection, and we ground ourselves in that. Because we are grounded in that, how do we choose to live? Knowing that, as the reading, Channing's reading told us, you know, if I'm going to be miserable, that miserableness is going to go out like ripples before me and around me. If I'm going to offer joy and beauty, that will go out from me. So how do we choose, knowing that we're interconnected? How do we choose to live? And we choose to be guided by love. So grounded in the interconnectedness of life and guided by love. And then we have to think about the fact that, as Scott said, you know, the word love has dozens of different meanings. And what do we do? How do we figure out how to love in any situation? And we do that by growing in wisdom. So when we gather in this place, it's about being grounded, guided, and growing. And those are the things we do. And because Scott is the one who reflects on those each week, he's actually going to reflect on interconnectedness and interdependence for us, which is why the man is having such a dreadful time with that microphone, because he has to wear that so that he can share his thoughts with you today. And I very much appreciate him taking on this responsibility for me this morning.
When I was young, younger, I was taken with the knight in shining armor image. I loved heraldry and shields and the designs, the colors. I loved the whole idea of defending the country, the truth, the queen. I loved all that, and I collected anything to do with heraldry, and I would design my own shields, and then I would, you know, the pony brasses, I put them all over my wall with the different heraldic devices on them, and I would pretend, you know, that I was, you know, guys, you've done this too, I'm not the only one, that, you know, the rescue, the swooping down, it was just a wonderful and to go to England then and see ceilings built with these heralds, I would just take the pictures and love it all. And the idea of I tell Greta I'm her liege man. Is that not good? Her liege man. Yes, liege man. Whatever. And when our guests here, liege man means I am to protect, to guide, to help, to be, but not to boss around her.
I
When our guest here mentioned the word worship, and I wanted to put that together as soon as you said it, because I love the image of the knight bowing on one knee to the sovereign. Now, I'm not a monarchist anymore, but I'm just giving that image. So what do I bow my knee to? What do I say, that's what I serve, that's what I give my life to, that's what I want to mold myself into that matches that? And that's kind of what we do with those, they're just concepts. They're not a formula or a new liturgy or something. They're just ideas to help us. So the idea of what do I find that worthy that I would put it up as high as I could imagine and then bow my knee to it or bow my head and say, I will. I want to be that. I want to live like that. And that's where we try and put that. What would that be? And for many people, it's very different. For some people, it has a supernatural sense. For some people, it's a natural sense. What we focus here is to take life itself and put it up that high and say, I want to live with my eyes wide open to all the realities of life, the hard ones, the easy ones, the beautiful ones, the terrifying ones. I want to be that awake. I want to be that aware, and it will take my lifetime to even advance to a bit of that. That's what we're going to talk about a little bit. But then this idea of how would I live? So how I'm bowing my knee to say, this is how I want to live in that reality. And that's where the word love comes in. So it's all that idea of worship or worthiness. What do I call eminently, supremely worthy that I would want to give my life to? So that's that idea. So carrying on with the idea of that life being so interconnected, everyone from David Suzuki, you'll see quotes on the page I handed out from all sorts of either scientists or humanitarians, and they're all trying to say to us, life is that connected. It matters. I ordered a book. My great love is the ocean and everything in it. And so I ordered a book, and I got it in the mail, and I ran up to Second Cup where Greta was writing her second book, just sort of writing away. And I made her look through the entire book. It was a big encyclopedia. And I was so excited because it was the Encyclopedia of Nude Branches. Well, they're about this big, and they live in the ocean, and they're multicolored and multi-shaped, and they're just wonderful. But I had no idea that a 250-page encyclopedia never repeated one picture of them. There were that many. So I knew Greta had to know. She had to experience this. So we actually thumbed through the entire encyclopedia there. We looked at every single little picture of every nudibranch in the ocean. And it's that. It matters. It matters. I never even knew they existed. And they matter. So that interconnectivity. The first three quotes on your sheet, the second one even, I think, takes you to the tide pool. I love that image. It has you looking in the tide pool and all its little life in the tide pool. The fact that you're getting your papers out means you weren't reading them during anything else that was going on. That's very good. looking into the tide pools and the life in a tide pool, the little eddy of water that comes in after the tide goes out. Tide pool, and then he has you looking to the stars and seeing it's the same stuff, and then looking back to the tide pool in wonder. I think it's just an amazing thing. And they use the word tapestry, and often it's the sea. Things like anything that reminds us that we're connected with things we don't even know yet, and that it matters how we live in relation to that. So the idea of impact, Fort McMurray residents are so acutely aware right now of the impact of something just called weather. We talk about the weather or the one spark of fire and then the wind and all that. There's impacts we can't control at all. And there are some ideologies that say we can, that our behavior affects that. We don't truck with that really, but how we behave in it is really the impact we can have. So I wanted to look closely at interconnections And I was saying to the vocal ensemble earlier, this subject of that we all affect things and they affect us can make you feel really, really guilty. Like you could just feel terrible at the end of a message like this. Just slumping in your chairs, realizing all that we don't do. So know that I'm slumping as I talk. Because it's, and all we want to do here is not make us feel horrific about how much we don't do, but rather, oh, there's an opportunity to do something else, something more, something different, a little change. And if we can encourage that with a positive way, that's tremendous. So the idea of interconnectedness, the impact, there's the impact we have. There's the fact that we rely on each other. There's reliance on each other. Then there's dependence on each other. And then there's codependence on each other. And then there's being subjugated to another person. And then there's being owned by another person. And all of those go on our planet. Every single one of those. There are people, all of us, have an impact on each other. And there are those that we rely on. I rely on you to be who you are to me. I kind of count on that. And when Greta mentioned the friend of a family, we try in many ways to say, you can count on me, not to be perfect, not to always come through, but count on me, I want to be there. And then the dependent, there are people that are dependent at various degrees in various times of their life, and they really do hope that the people they are dependent on feel that they matter, no matter how the level of need is. And you can, in the sharing time, we touch on that. Then codependent, we're all a little bit, by the way, it came out of the Alcohol Anonymous world, but we're all a little codependent, which means I'm not happy unless you're happy. I'm not doing okay unless you're doing okay. Now, there's a nice thought in that, isn't that? That's got a nice feel to it, accepting that if I live that way totally, then I'm dependent on you for my well-being, which is a giving away of my own responsibility for my well-being. And so that's not as good a thing to be dependent on someone else. So their mood is your mood, their actions are your actions, and they're actually running your life. Actually, you're letting them run your life. And so that's something we work back from. And then being subjugated, we read all the time about child soldiers, about sweatshop workers who are living in subjugation. The impact that people are having on them is horrific. And that's happening on our planet. And then there are still people who own people on our planet. There is ownership of people and slave labor, slave owner to own another human being and conduct their life the way you want. So it is interconnected. You know, you could take a time on any of those ideas I just gave and think about that, the impact other people have on other people on our planet, for good or for ill. And so the question we keep asking ourselves is, how do we do that? How do we relate? I work in social work in long-term care, and one of my responsibilities is teaching residents' rights, resident abuse, ethics, and how we relate to one another. And I teach the legal meaning of abuse in healthcare. And it goes like this. It actually came out of social work, but it's nursing, it's anything. So the legal interpretation of the word abuse, to abuse another, is that a person here has a contract to provide a service to that person there. Be it a doctor, be it a lawyer, be it a real estate agent, be it anyone who has a contract to provide a service to this person. This person relies on that person for something they need them to do that they can't do themselves, either right now or any time. And that leaves this person with the status called vulnerable. You are vulnerable to this person. Now, if you've ever been, Ruth's your husband, I've been hip operations, they put you to sleep, and then they saw you apart. They saw you, and then they hammer you. And Greta and I found out that you can be awake for your hip operation, and you can know what they're doing. You can hear this. So Greta suggested, I think I told you this, Greta suggested I say no, because you don't want to hear the doctor say, whoops. You just want them to fix it and keep going, right? But if you've never been in surgery, dentist, you go to the dentist, you open your mouth. You don't say, I'd like you to use the third drill to the right and amalgam number chemical dis. You have no idea what he's going to do. Jim's not here. Wendy's here. Yeah. You tell him that we trust him. I trust him. He's my dentist. But I open my mouth and I trust him to be doing the right thing in the right way and to charge me for the right thing that he did, as opposed to six more teeth he didn't do anything for. So there's ethics, there's trust in his professional. So the legal idea of abusing someone, of having an abusive impact on another person, is that when this person, in this position of professional expertise in ethics, uses their relationship, their access to this person's body, to this person's information, to this body, to this person's future, if they use it, the law says, if they use it in a way that harms this person or puts them at risk of harm, that's called abuse. That's abusing your trusting relationship with another human being. And most often, these people honor this. But when we talk about impact, there are many, many, many occasions where this person does not, either knowingly or not knowingly. So the law added another word about harm, that this person knew would cause harm or ought to have known. Now that's where that guilty thing comes in, if we push that to all of us. What ought we to know about our impact on the world? We ought to know. We either know it or we ought to know how we are affecting life. So what makes our choice in how we impact people, it's got to do with our values, but it's also got to do with our worldview. I did a field placement in my social work in my master's, bachelor level, and so you're not a social worker yet, so you just observe. So I was in the Ajax police station, and I was the observer, and there was two female counselors, who were counseling a room full of, I think, about 20 males who had now come out of prison for spousal or partner assault and required to then take this course for 13 weeks. And I thought it was an anger management course, but it wasn't at all. And it took me a while to find this. The two counselors were fabulous. They were tough. They just went at these fellas really, really with passion. And what came to light was, it wasn't that they couldn't manage their anger, because there was all sorts of people they didn't hurt. Even people that could get them mad, but they didn't hurt the bus driver, and they didn't hurt their boss. They hurt the woman in their life. It was a course on a worldview, on a view of the humanity of the female gender. That's what it was about. They had to change their worldview about what women were, instead of being what women were for, and that's a whole topic in itself there, but the woman as a human being of equal value and rights as they were. And that's what took a long, long time. In every respect, as these guys checked in, they would say what they had done wrong, and then they would say, yes, I did that, but it wasn't my fault. It was her fault, because she didn't do what she was supposed to do. That justified me. And so the guys that had been in the group longer, when they heard the new guys say that, they would jump all over. No, you can't say that. You can't say that. You're responsible for your behavior. It's your impact on another human being. Nobody causes you to impact. And I've remembered those comments so clearly. And in my work, the behavior of a resident can never be given as an excuse for abuse. You could never say, well, they were driving me crazy. Now, I want you to picture someone in your life that can or has in the past driven you crazy. I'll just give you a moment to find that person in your scope. Greta's looking right at me. She's looking right directly at me. But then you all are. So that was, yeah. I'm so sorry. But I don't mean that you hate them or anything. It's okay if you hate. I don't. But they drive you crazy. And so the choices of your behavior, I want you to, how often have we said, well, if they weren't the way they were, I would be much better. I'm not usually that, but look at me with all these nice people, I'm quite lovely, but that person aggravates me, and then it's different. So it's this impact Are we blaming another's impact on us for our behavior? That doesn't work. So about the choice. Now, the Yo-Yo Ma, that beautiful Yo-Yo Ma. Have you heard this cellist, Yo-Yo Ma? When we, it's on the second page, sort of quarter of the way down. When we enlarge our view of the world, we deepen our understanding of our own lives. And that took me, when I was reading that, that took me to a book I read a long time ago, and maybe you've almost overheard this one, but hopefully we can take a fresh look. In 1923, a man named Martin Buber wrote a book, didn't get translated into English for about 10 more years, a little more than 10 years. And his focus was the meaningfulness of relationships, our impact on each other. And you may be very familiar with this, or this may be brand new, but in my reading, I found a new way of looking at this. Open up. You ever have those things, you know something, and you read it from a little different angle, and it's, oh my, that's rich. Oh my, I don't do that very well. Oh my, I want to change in that way. So that's what happened to me during this. The name of the book is Ich und Du. Did I come even close? Not even close. Okay, Ich und Du. I and Thou. Is that better? I and Thou. It's the name of his book, I and Thou. Now, the word Thou isn't usually used. We don't greet each other that way. I'm pleased to see thee today. We don't use that. But there is a wonderful quote that says, I think it's Amish or Mennonite, and it goes, sometimes I think the world is crazy. All the people in the world are crazy except me and thee, and often I have my doubts about thee. I've always remembered that little phrase. It's generous until you finish the sentence, and then... But the idea of thou, and Buber goes into... How many are familiar with this? Just so I know, for the I and thou. Okay. So you're doing better with this than the rest of us, right? No. The idea of our relations to everything. That's what he wants us to look at. How we relate to everything. Not how we just experience, see, taste, smell, touch, all that sort of thing. Not just that, but how we relate. And his main point is that we are always relating. We are always in relation to everything. And these are big thoughts, and so I'm just sort of giving you the idea to gel around in your mind. But so he typifies two ways of relating. Two ways of relating. And he calls them an I, it, and I, thou. So he says that an it relationship, if I treat someone, I'm going to do it as someone first. If I treat someone, I don't abuse them, I don't, but the impact I have on them, I know I'm connected, and I use that interconnect, I have an impact on that person. I'm going to use that person for whatever I can get from them. And why I'm emphasizing that is just to say the world is interconnected doesn't say how we choose to live in it. Just says we know it's interconnected. And a lot of people can say, good, I'm going to use it for everything I can get, because I can impact all sorts of things for my own good. I will use the people around me as an it. I will use them for me. They exist for mine. Now, the extreme of that is extreme narcissism, which says I'm the only thing on the planet, and everyone else is either a feather in my cap or in my way. And so I use people accordingly like that, and you could change. This week you could be a feather in my cap, and next week you're in my way, so I treat you like an it. And I don't even see it. Now, hopefully, you know, and narcissism is one of the full-blown psychological narcissism is one of the hardest things to treat and change, because their whole worldview is set that way. But for all of us, we can learn for that is, how do we see other people as an it? Are they there for their own reason to flourish just like I want to? Are you there? I may not understand you. I may think you're bizarre. I might not even like you. But you have as much right to be you and to flourish as I do. So if I see you as simply something for me or something to be cast away, that's the it. Now, he even says we can use things, we can relate to things that way. There's nothing wrong with saying, I'm going to use this piano for a certain purpose. But I could abuse the piano. I could treat it, I'm in a bad mood, so I'll wreck it. Or I'll play irresponsibly. All sorts of choices, even with a thing, to treat it like an it, that it's for me, for whatever I want, and I'll get what I want. You just have to get onto the highway, just the drive that way. me first, me now, don't care about anybody. And then we think, one of the quotes on the page is by Bill Clinton, and I agree with it to a point. But he said, we cannot build our own future without helping others to build theirs. And the only thing I have trouble with that is to say, maybe we could say, well, at least treat people better, because in the end it's going to do something good for you. At the very bottom, do it because it might come back to you okay. It will help you build yours if you help them build theirs. So there's that. But if we could actually say, I don't want to see anyone or anything as simply an it for me, bar everything else. And that's his idea of it. So then he moves to the I, thou. And I don't know why they translated it as thou instead of you, because it could be you, it's I, you. But he used thou to give us that King James Shakespearean sort of solid big sense. This isn't just talking about you, you, and you, and you. What's that from? You, and you, and you. Sound of Music, that's very good. That was sort of an in thing if you're too young to have watched Sound of Music. But watch it and you'll catch the quote. You, and you, and you. It's just a really famous quote. Meaningless. So the I thou says, I will not objectify, I will not turn anybody into an object in my sight. I will not relate to a person as if they are for me, that's the reason they exist. And if they don't do anything good for me, I devalue them. Doesn't matter what happens to them. So it doesn't matter what happens to child labor in another country, because they're not doing anything for me and I don't even have to see it. But as soon as I know it, oh my, another human being is being put into that situation. And that's a thou. That's a person with as much rights as I have, as much value as I have. Oh, and if at the very least it makes us stop and say, oh, huge. And then that comes in. How do I relate to that person in that sweatshop? How do I relate to that person in that's owned by someone else? What can I do to say, to prove, I don't think it's okay. I know it's not okay. So the idea of thou is that seeing another person as much a person as you. It gets a little difficult if you think less of yourself. So sometimes another thou can help you with that and start treating you as a person of worth and dignity and meaning. And that's a beautiful thing too. So I read all that, and I've read it before. And as soon as you read that, you think, okay, who am I treating not as thou enough? Like, is there someone I'm discounting or dismissing? It doesn't mean you have to love everyone all the time, as in go out for lunch with everybody or be gushy with them. It's not about gush. It's about respect and about dignity and about honoring that. So then I read another paragraph, and I thought the author was saying, it's not I to a thou. It's not I to a thou. It's I thou. I just let that roll for a second. I had to think about it for a minute. It's not that there's a separate I and a separate thou. What he's talking about is that I-thou-ness of our lives, that we're always relating. We're never not in relation to things. It's what we're doing with it that makes the difference. But we're always, always relating. So an I and an it is immediate, or an I and a thou, and it's always our choice whether we slip into an itness or a thou-ness with a person or with a thing or with a group, with an organization. So the I is automatically already in relation to you. I don't step out of relation with you. I'm either adding to your life or taking away, or at least I'm not abusing you. I'm always in some respect doing or not doing something with you. And that, I mean, it's just Martin's idea, right? But it's tremendously important, because it's how we live and breathe. So we live in relation to others. There isn't an I that's separate from that. Because if I'm separating myself way much from humanity, I'm actually impacting them poorly. So I'm always in relation. So I wanted to just have you think, oh yes, and think very quickly. That's the look I give you when you're, yes, I see that look. Sometimes I can't, really. So I want you to think, just in your own mind, aren't you glad, I always do this at work, aren't you glad that we haven't technologically got to the place where there's little balloons over all of your heads and we can all see what you're thinking? Aren't you glad for that? Like, you know, I'm glad for it, but if it was there, you know, it would make for more conversation, wouldn't it? but the idea of, just so in your minds, just contrast, and I'll just give you a couple of examples and that's it. So say, think of a tree. Think of an I-it relationship with a tree. You see it, you see what it's like, you know what's going on in it. A scientist can have an it relationship with a tree. But how am I relating to the tree? Maybe I take a beautiful picture of it and share that. Maybe I water it. Maybe I take care of it. Maybe if it's old and it has to go, I kind of sad that it's going to go down. And maybe if people are cutting them down all over the place to make too many highways, whatever, then I can grieve that. And maybe I might even write somebody about what's happening with our trees. So that would be a thou relationship. I'm relating to the tree. Now, I don't mean, don't say this out loud to the tree. Like, I don't mean relationship, you know. Although every time I get down south, I used to get out of the car and hug a palm tree and say, I love you, I just love you. But it's not that. I mean, that's just gushy, right? But to say, how am I relating to this tree? And then, okay, so think of another thing. Think of a kitchen cleanser, which you hadn't thought of yet sitting here. But someone says, yes, I was. Yeah, okay. But a kitchen cleanser, it could be it. I'm just going to use it for me. It's for me. Whatever. I don't care what's in it. I don't care how much, who made it. I'll just use it, right? That's in it. And then, but if I'm relating, okay, what's behind this? Is this an okay thing? Or I promised I would use this and I haven't used it yet, so I better start using it because I want to help out. Like, there's a whole bunch of thoughts that can come, even on a simple object. Or think of a certain relative you have, a certain relative. And they were supposed to do something for you, or they're supposed to have you, and you have a relationship. You can either treat them like an it, depending on whether you like them, and so much it's dependent on whether we like someone or not or whatever. Or a bully, your experience of a bully. Are you it as an it? It's something to be eradicated and resisted, whatever. But the thou, that bully, is a human being with dignity and worth that they probably aren't living out very well. But how would I relate to that? How do I treat that person as a thou? And that can include me saying, your behavior is out of line. But I care about you. I want it to be better. There's a whole flavor in that that's not an it. And then the last one I wanted to say was a rainforest. Your relation to a rainforest. We've been in a couple of them, but tell me who's not ever been in a rainforest? You've never been in a rainforest. I just want to say you've never been in a rainforest. Okay, so that's the people I wanted to talk to. Supposing you've never been in one, you can treat it like an it by not even reading up on what's happening to the world. Or you can think, oh my goodness, maybe I should know a little bit more about this on my planet because it's extremely important. Or say a coral reef, or say something out there that I don't know much about, but the more aware I am. So that interconnectedness of life, if I'm saying that's what I'm bowing to, how do I treat this life? And I will be its liege man. I will serve it with all my heart. I will try and change my behavior in ways that show I honor it. I don't just use it. I honor it. I don't just use it. If any of you want to come up to me and point out things I need to change, please do. Some of you do it very nicely, and others do it like a partner would, you know. But you know, there's a friend that I have who is far more ethical than I am about many choices. And she has changed much of my behavior. But she's changed it because she is gentle and sad, not mad. She's sad, not mad about me. And I honor that, and it's actually effective. So if we could be with each other, those encouragements to live a little differently each time, to live with the planet like a thou, and nature as a thou, and all people on the planet as a thou, and the people we know and bump up into all the time as a thou, then that's the call. That's worthy of worship. That is worthy of worship. Thanks.
that. You made me think about all those things that we perhaps don't consider vows in our lives, the stuff, the advice. I was thinking also about the cover article in The Observer this month, Are Vegans Right? Our whole relationship with animals and food. And I'm reminded to go out into a world that I thou world, where we're always embedded in relationships and where we as a community feel that we're in a challenging relationship with the wider church, and where individuals feel that they're in challenging relationships with their partners or their children. I am not my partner, my children. And it's not easy to be aware of the thou. It's not easy to let go of the demand to be a thou when we're not willing to share that with someone else. So when you go from this place into that I thou-ness of the world, go just as someone who holds relationship. Feel it, dwell in it, invite it, whether it's, you know, your kitchen counter, whether it's your neighbor, whether it's the big box store you're parking in front of. Acknowledge relationship, because as soon as you do that, I think you start living differently. So go from this place and hold relationship in your heart, in your hands, in your lives, and make the world a better place. Go in peace.
You have been listening to a podcast from West Hill United Church, located in Scarborough, Ontario, Canada. These podcasts are made possible by the generous support of our listeners, volunteers, and members of our community. To donate, go to our website, www.westhill.net, and click on the Canada Helps button, or go to www.westhill.net/donate.